Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
I'm John Batchelor with my good colleague, Jeff McCausland. The news from Syria is fog of war. However, Jeff, the reports are credible that massacres have been going on in the Soweto province, southernmost Syria, abutting the Jordanian border. Massacres by the Syrian National Army and their Bedouin allies against the Druze community. Unarmed people in their houses. Massacres, bodies brought into the hospital. And asking who are the killers, I'm told by people who are informed. I've never been to Syria. I've been to Jordan. I've been to Israel many times, but not to Syria. I'm told by people on the ground that the killers are former ISIS, now in Syrian National Army uniforms. This is the Syria the President of the United States and the President of Mohammed bin Salman shook the man's hand, Shara. Jeff, this situation we thought was getting under control after the Iranian-Israeli ceasefire. We thought there was reason to believe the war in Gaza was winding down. We thought there was reason to believe that Mohammed bin Salman was going to step in with cash and provide, if not the Abraham Accords, then certainly a backdrop to Israel's rebuilding of Gaza. But what's going on in Syria is a massacre. And who's there? The Israelis launch an airstrike against the defense ministry of the Syrian army. Al-Shara is the self-named president. I can't sort this out, Jeff. You hear the same reports I do. Is the White House listening?
Well, I think they are, John, because, of course, Secretary of State Rubio has been very heavily involved and supposedly has wickered an arrangement that will bring this to a ceasefire here in the near future. But it's obviously explosive. And in the aftermath of the fall of the Assad regime, we know that Syria became basically a state of chaos. Yes, al-Shara declared himself president, but, of course, he was former al-Qaeda, fundamentally admits to that. And his forces only control a portion of Syria. They don't necessarily fully control, by the way, the east, which is where the United States still has troop presence in the far eastern portion of Syria, supporting the Kurds. Nor did he control the coastal area along the Mediterranean, which was still largely controlled by people who were still loyal to a degree to Assad. And then finally, in the southeast western portion of the country, Ceuta, for example, that being the area of the Druze. So that particular cauldron of instability is still bubbling, and whether or not he can get a handle on it and bring these groups together in a unified approach to rebuild Syria still remains a major question. Obviously, external players are involved. Israelis want to avoid any enemy force controlling the border between Israel and Syria, and also have supported the Druze for many years. Iran, obviously, is probably more interested in instability as it tries to reach a certain amount of control over the region so it can export weapons to its remaining of its allies in Lebanon. It's interesting, John, in the midst of all this, CENTCOM announced that 750 tons of most likely Iranian military supplies, cruise missile parts, engines for drones, explosives, etc., were intercepted en route to the Houthis down in Yemen, who are still routinely sending missiles and drone attacks against Israel periodically.
Too many villains, too little time. We head to the Pacific. Suddenly, Japan is saying we're not sure about what we'll do in the event of war. Suddenly, Australia is looking cross-eyed at the Trump administration and making ambiguous remarks about where it is in terms of the coalition arrayed, I thought, against the imminent attack by the People's Republic of China's PLA Navy. What to make sense of the Japan hesitation and the Albanese quibble?
Well, John, it seems to me it's a function of, you know, a change in Washington to a large degree and domestic politics at home, not unlike the Europeans. In the case of Japan, we know that the government has become increasingly unpopular. He is confronted by rising problems at home, The Trump administration, oh, by the way, has put on, as of 1 August, a 25% tariff on Japan. And I think we seem to be assuming that one can disaggregate the security relationship between the United States and an ally like Japan from the economic relationship. And I'm not sure those two things can be disaggregated. And the Japanese did make a commitment to dramatically increase their defense spending, but it appears problematical based on the economy they'll be able to succeed. Then, of course, in Australia, I think the situation may even be more extreme because, of course, the AUKUS agreement between the United States, the United Kingdom, and the Australians was a signature achievement, I think, in the Pacific for the Biden administration. This was the co-production of nuclear attack submarines and the purchase of several by the Australians to be delivered sometime after 2030. Now, that submarine production is way behind schedule, but there's been a recent announcement that the new Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, Mr. Colby, is reviewing that and may, in fact, eliminate this AUKUS program, which would be devastating not only to the current government in Australia, Mr. Albanese, but devastating to, I think, Australian national security, because in terms of the investment, billions and billions of dollars, they have banked on that for their national security future. And furthermore, this is not solely about the delivery of submarines, but it's about that relationship between the United States and Australia, our longest ally in many ways, who has sent troops with the United States not only to World War I, World War II, Korea, sent troops to Vietnam, sent troops to Iraq, sent troops to Afghanistan. It would be devastating, I fear, for that particular relationship, which also would have allowed the United States to port our nuclear submarines in Australia and perhaps position more forces down under.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired, CBS News, Dickinson College, CEO, Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.